Hey, welcome to Ham Nation. You are just in time for a jam-packed show. We've got Riley Hollingsworth, K4ZDH, to talk about the volunteer monitoring program. We've got Pete, KE5GGY from 3916, and he's got a special guest from the North Pole, little rare DX. Well, not so rare this time of the year because Santa's always on the 3916 net in the month of December. We've got George with Smoke and Solder and a hair-raising tale, so to speak. Also, we're going to talk to Neil Rapp and Bryant Rascal about youth on the air. We've got Newsline. We've got Dr. T with a solar update and Amanda and a whole lot more. That's all coming up for you right now on Ham Nation. Ham Nation is brought to you from LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure that they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether employees are working in the office or remotely. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation. This is Ham Nation, episode 483 for December 9th, 2020. Riley Hollingsworth and the Volunteer Monitoring Program.
Good evening, everybody. It's Bob Heil, K9EID. And we're just around the corner from Christmas, as you know. And here we are on Ham Nation, and I'm glad you've joined us. We have some really special things happening tonight. And I understand that there's going to be a guy with reindeer come by here in a while, so we got to figure that out. But we're very honored to have a couple of great guests. Riley Hollingsworth is with us tonight. Riley, thanks so much for joining us, and it's good to see you. And I hope that you have an enjoyable time here this evening. Got a few things to talk about. And also, we have Pete with us. Pete is KE5GGY, but he also, you probably know him from 3916, and we're going to get into all of that. But let's talk to Riley a little bit before we come back to Pete. Riley, it's been a long, long time since we've met and we've kept up because we share the same birth date. And so it's so happy to see you. Are you doing well? And what's going on in your world?
I was doing all right till I started trying to solder a DIN connector for my 590SG. And that you never leave that in a good mood. And not only that, Bob, you think you might have problems out there? Well, it was on the evening news tonight. We have an emu loose in the county. And so they can't catch it. And my sister-in-law told me, he said, you know it's the end times when the emus break out of their compound. So other than that, I'm doing fine.
Oh, that's great. Well, you have a kind of a new, you got a new position, right? Lately,
I guess you could call it. That's been about a year with I work with the league with the volunteer monitoring program, which is a joint project between the league and the FCC. So that's what I've been spending most of my time on, and I thought I'd give you a little summary of that tonight.
Okay, well, we're listening, so have at it. Okay. Yeah, we're all ears.
Well, we have about 160 volunteer monitors across the country. And this is the successor to the very successful official observer program, by the way. And I won't go into the bore you with the details on the background, because if you go to the league website and search volunteer monitor program, it'll give you all of that. But we have about 160 monitors across the country. And looking at the third quarterly report, I'm still working on the fourth one, of course, but the total monitoring hours that these people did, so men and women, from July to September was 6,000 hours on HF, 6,100 hours on VHF, UHF, and other. And they turned in about 60 incident reports, but out of those, only about six were actionable. which means that only about six needed some discussion with the licensee, because we're not the band police, and every little discrepancy, every little thing that's wrong, we don't get into that. If somebody has a key click and they're on a vintage net, or they're using vintage equipment, we're not going to worry about stuff like that. Vintage equipment, if it's really good vintage equipment, it's supposed to click. That's not going to degrade the amateur bands. We sent out seven letters, or made phone calls, or I made phone calls to seven of these people, some of which received letters. We also had part of the program too, is the FCC wanted us to recognize good amateur operations so that we could encourage amateurs, and there were 35 nominations during this quarter for good operator awards, and we issued 15. Just by chance, three or four of them went to young people, teenagers, who had just gotten into amateur radio. So we were proud of that, and one of them emailed me this afternoon and said that he had it framed in the radio room, and that's what we want. We want people to feel some pride in passing on this avocation. We had two referrals to the FCC, and we had two referrals from the FCC. The FCC will occasionally ask us to listen on certain frequencies or see if we can resolve some problem. And we met with the FCC three times, and had a lot of club meetings and group meetings by Zoom, which we will talk to any club that wants us to meet with them by Zoom and discuss the program. We'll be glad to do it. Can you hear me okay so far?
Certainly can. It's great. Taking notes.
Okay. We worked with the FCC in setting up this program, which it was really difficult to set it up. It's running very well. It was more difficult to set it up than I thought, but easier to run it than I thought. We worked with the FCC on where to place volunteer monitors. They had certain areas where they wanted additional coverage. And as it turns out, when we went through our applications, we were able to fill those slots pretty well. But the FCC, we try to resolve problems, as I said, without FCC intervention. But the FCC expects referrals if we don't get cooperation. And one thing we are not is the band police. We don't babysit the bands. Bob, amateurs, as you know, have thousands of frequencies, and we take examinations on how to use them and how to use this stuff. And every rig ever made, even the computer rigs, have a big knob, or an option that you can get a big knob, and that is to change frequency. So we're not going to try to resolve what are essentially playground disputes, where someone just won't be courteous and won't move just a slight bit off frequency to allow a net to operate. Having said that, though, we're not going to let those people destroy the bands either. We'll use whatever tools we have. You asked me earlier about 7200. That's a good example. 7200 was an embarrassment. But Tennessee has a harassment by communication statute, and a lot of states have this. And one of the parties that was getting this interference went to local court and got an injunction against the main wacko on 7200. And the injunction was issued, and within an hour, that person had violated the injunction, gotten on the air again. So he was picked up and sentenced to 30 days. So he appealed it through the courts. It went to the Tennessee Court of Appeals. And of course, he was expecting that the Tennessee Court of Appeals would say, no, this is federal communications area. We don't get into communications. There's federal preemption. That's not what the Tennessee Court of Appeals said. The Tennessee Court of Appeals said it doesn't matter that it's the Federal Communications Commission, or that the licenses are issued by the federal government. The fact is, this fellow violated an order from a local judge. And so they upheld a 30-day sentence. And a 30-day sentence in the local jail is quite an attitude adjustment process, we found. And lots of states have these types of statutes, these harassment by communication statutes. They were originally meant for telephone in the old days, but they've been broadened and interpreted to cover computer and, in some cases, radio. And we're going to take full advantage of these to stop some of these problems. For example, it's a perfect solution if a state has a statute for 2-meter deliberate interference. We can also ask the FCC to modify a license to delete voice privileges, which I think a lot of people haven't thought of. You know, the good news about amateur radio is that we're a cross-section of society. The bad news about amateur radio is that we're a cross-section of today's society. And in today's society, it seems that everybody's got rights, and you never hear any mention of responsibilities. You just don't hear that. But with every right comes a responsibility. And I encourage these people that we're having difficulty with to look at their license and see that they don't have any frequency rights whatsoever. If you look at the license, it says privileges, not rights. And privileges can be lifted. Now, overall, we've gotten very good cooperation and almost no volunteer monitor turnover. We've had two or three that had to or asked to get out of the program because of family health issues. One had COVID but has recovered, or job assignments that just made it impossible for them to do monitoring on the bands. But overall, we've had a very stable volunteer monitor pool, and the FCC has given us very good cooperation. And I try to tell everybody that we're all in this together. There could be a lot of other uses for our frequencies. And when you hear the idiotic conduct on 75, for example, where it seems to be prevalent, and that brings up another point. I've done a lot of personal research and found that RF energy does not cause brain damage except on certain 75-meter frequencies. So some of the conduct on 75 endangers the entire amateur radio service. And we have a lot of our frequencies because they're inherently unstable. So if somebody walks in the door and has a good use for 75 meters or portions thereof or 40, then we've got a lot of justifying and explaining to do. And we have to realize that we don't have lifetime rights to these frequencies. We have a responsibility to pass this avocation on to others in at least as good a shape as we found it. And the people that seem to cause the most problems on 75, seems to be on 75, occasionally on 40, but mostly 75 for some reason. I tell them that what I think it was Edward R. Murrow said, just because your opinion can be heard around the world doesn't mean it's any more important than when it could only be heard at the end of the bar. And that's what they need to realize. A lot of the world doesn't need their opinions, and their justification is the Part 97 purposes for amateur radio. And to the extent they're trying to harass people and won't share frequencies and so forth, we have thousands of discrete frequencies. There's no reason why somebody can't move a little bit. That a lot of the problems come from people that just won't move because they have. They have rights, and it's a conduct thing. But the FCC is working very well with us, and some people have assumed that the FCC is shut down because of COVID. That's a very dangerous assumption to make, I would say that. We've gotten very good cooperation with them. But overall, I'm very very happy with the amateur service and very happy with the way everyone's cooperating with the volunteer monitors. It seems to be going, I think, honestly, it's going a little bit beyond expectations. Of course, we can't really get a lot of the word out these days because there's no ham fest. And speaking of that, sometimes I'd go to a ham fest and think, well, why am I here? I've been to 1,000 of these. But right now, I'd give anything to go to a ham fest. It's going to be so good to get back to a routine and stare at a piece of vintage equipment that I've seen for 20 years and still enjoy looking at it. So I'll be glad we can do that. And that gets you back to the camaraderie of amateur radio, and that's what it's all supposed to be about. And I'll be so glad when this period that we're in now is over so amateur radio can get back to its full potential and we can have Dayton again and Orlando or Seaside or whatever. Absolutely. Amateur radio needs that, and I certainly do.
Yeah. Well, I'm so happy that things are going well, and I know that you've cleaned up some things, and I'm really appreciative of you to come on and let us know exactly what's happening. And if anyone knows or has a problem, who can they contact? And I would assume it wouldn't be the FCC right here. Where's the best place to get something?
It would be the league, and if you just send a general email to the league, it'll get to Dan Henderson up there, or you can send it to the regulatory people, or you can send it to me. It'll come to me from the league, but my call sign, K4ZDH, is already out there for a million people, and that's fine. I always answer emails. It might take me 2 or 3 days, but I'll do it. It's K4ZDH, so Zulu Delta Hotel, at ARRL.net. But if you happen to send a general email regarding an enforcement problem to the league, it'll end up on Dan Henderson's desk or mine or both. Yeah. We're working now on having a point of contact and publishing a point of contact, so everybody will have one email address to use. And we're working with the new CEO of the league, and I think we'll have that set up soon.
Well, excellent information. I appreciate you coming on and taking your time away from your sweet wife, Pat. For anybody that don't know, Roddy and I share the same birth date, October the 5th. So once in a while, we get to bring our wives to get together and have a birthday celebration, but can't happen this year, but we'll see about next. I really appreciate you.
Last night in our test video, Pat was going to come back, but she burned her hand on the oven. And the thermostat wire had dropped down, and that's one of the things I've been going to fix for 3 months. So needless to say, that got fixed pretty early this morning.
You didn't have to solder a DIN plug for it, right?
Said, don't show me that T-shirt you have that says when you ask a man to fix something, he'll fix it. You don't have to remind him every 6 months. So I won't be wearing that for a while.
All right. You're the best, Riley. Thank you so much for the years of involvement and keeping things clean. I'll look forward to working you on the air. And, yeah, you ought to check out the Freewheelers on 3916 late night. They're a great bunch of guys. You talk about people that lay it down and keep the rules right. They're the people. Thanks so much. Greetings to you.
Okay.
Happy holidays. And we'll get together soon somewhere.
Oh, all right, that's the deal, Bob. Thank you, and good to see you guys again, and have nice holidays to you.
All right. Well, it doesn't get any better than listening to the master tell us how he's cleaning up things, and you guys all know what I'm talking about. One of those frequencies was quite a thorn in all of our sides, but it's no longer there. So thank you to Riley and everyone at the ARRL to make sure that happened. Well, I talked about 3916, the Freewheelers. Well, I got the guru there. Pete is with us tonight, KE5GGY. Hi, Pete. How are you doing?
Greetings. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Robert, it's good to be with you tonight.
All right. You're quite a guy, and I appreciate all that you do for ham radio. And you're doing a lot of stuff in the broadcast industry also, so I know you know how to talk to a microphone. Tell us just a little bit about the Freewheelers, where it is, what it is, and so on, please.
Sure. Well, Freewheelers is a net, and there's actually two other nets that occurs every night on 3916, right there on that 75-meter band that Riley was talking about. I think 3916 was one of the bright spots on 75. Three nets every night starting at 7 o'clock. It's a group called the Rag Chew Crew. No net control. We just kind of throw it around. Everybody's welcome. We use NetLogger, but you can check in over the air. 8:30, we have the Tailgaters. 9 o'clock, trivia every night, and that's just a blast. It's interactive, and we have a great time. And then at 10 o'clock, it's our legacy net, the anchor net, which is called the Freewheelers, and that runs from 10 until after midnight. But the common thread through all the nets, Bob, as you know, because you join us from time to time, is that everybody's welcome. We try to check the controversial topics at the door, you know, religion, politics, you know, vulgarity, all the things that really don't belong on ham radio or get people in heated heated discussions. We try to leave those at the door and focus on, you know, the good things of amateur radio, the service, and the camaraderie, too. And that's what 3916 is all about. And then here at Christmas time, Bob, and I know that's one of the things we're talking about, it's a special time of the year because we get into SantaNet, and that is just great fun.
Yeah. People can check in to 3916. What are the times that they can check in with their grandsons or granddaughters or just friends to talk to Santa? When do they do
sure,
that?
Sure. Yeah. So SantaNet is connecting good boys and girls and even some bad ones occasionally with the North Pole, Santa Claus. We're on the air every night at 7:15 Central, and pre-net check-ins are taken starting at 6 p.m. Central at the website CQSanta.com, and you're looking at the landing page right there. Really easy to check in, CQSanta.com, and we are on the air every night through and including Christmas Eve, and it's easy to check in. You just give us your name and call sign, names and ages of the children in your shack, and then we call on you and get you on the air with the big man. Third-party rules and regs, of course, apply. And also, we've got a way that people that aren't licensed or just don't have the capability to transmit can take part. And that's what we call a one-way shout-out from Santa. So if you don't have the ability to transmit, you can check in anyway. And as long as you can listen on an SDR or a radio, we'll be connecting Santa with you and have him do a special shout-out for you. But, Bob, this is our 15th year on 3916 of doing SantaNet. I remember back in the first year, there were just several of us on the air on a Christmas Eve, and somebody got the idea, hey, what if you relay in Santa for my child and I could do it for you? And we did that first year 15 years ago, and it's grown ever since. And now, hundreds of children will check in, and we're really excited that every year it seems like we get two or three that based on checking into ham radio, they get their amateur ticket and then check in with us later on 3916. But it's a great time of year, and we appreciate, of course, all the support you give us, Bob, here on Ham Nation. It is it's the best part of the year for 3916. We hope that everybody will stop by at some point. I will tell you that as we get closer to Christmas, especially Christmas Eve, it gets pretty busy. So the early part of the week and early season, like right now, is great. You won't have much of a wait, but whenever you can check in between now and Christmas Eve, we hope you'll join us on 3916.
Well, I will make that happen, and I appreciate you coming on with us, and we'll catch up maybe later on tonight on 3916 and get into some of that trivia stuff. I appreciate you coming on, because we got to move on, because I got another special guest coming here. But
well, and we have Santa, too. I guess Santa is going to connect in about 30, 45 seconds, maybe a minute. I think we're going to do a switchover. Is that right?
That's right. I said, we got a very special guest coming. I do have to tell everybody that during this busy time, and it really hasn't been just during this time, but it's during pretty much of this year, I've been doing club meetings. We'll do seven of them this week alone. I did one this afternoon to London, England, and it's really growing because we can't have club meetings, but the Zoom thing has really changed the platform of amateur radio. Because like today, I think they had around 50, 60 members in the Zoom meeting, and it's wonderful. You can have one-on-one or the whole group or whatever. So if you have a club, all you got to do is send me your email, give me a couple dates, and we'll be there. And it's really great because it's really things that I teach, and it's about antennas and phasing and equalization and how to set your parametric equalizer in your Yaesu and how to wire things and how to not do some things. It's really, really interesting because we talk about things that you hear about, but nobody's really ever told you how to exactly to do it. So we bring on a lot of information for your clubs, and everybody's thrilled, and they always want me to come back, and we do. I did one last night to a club that I had done before. But I really love visiting clubs, and this is one way I can do it. I used to come live, but not anymore for a while. So send me a day to your club, and let's have some fun and try to learn some things. Well, I have a note from Victor that we do have a visitor. So, Victor, let's see what's going on with it. Oh, right. There he is.
Little Bobby, how are you? Merry Christmas to you. You've been a good boy this year, Bob.
I have been, and I'm going to be looking for my Lionel train. I hope I get to see that.
Well, you know, you've been very good this year, and I know you've been doing a lot of ham clubs on Zoom, so we like what you're doing. And I tell you what, Riley Hollingsworth, he's on the good list, too. We're going to be bringing him some good stuff this year.
All right. Well, we're looking forward to that. And anything you can suggest to everybody to make sure they're all going to be in order when you come around?
Well, I'll tell you, it's been very busy up here at the North Pole, but I have a couple of things to say to the good boys and girls out there. Number one, keep being good, because we're so proud of you at the North Pole. Mrs. Claus and I are just so proud of the good boys and girls that are doing a good job in school. You're helping around the house. Just keep being good and check into 3916 every night at 7:15. I'm on the air saying hello to good boys and girls. So every night through Christmas Eve, the big man, that's me, on 3916. And Bob, I have one more thing I'd like to mention, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Well, here, I kind of got to get a little friend of mine from behind me here. Come here, you little guy. Hold on a second. You know, Christmas time is... Come here, little guy. Here we go. Christmas time is a very, very important time.
Yes.
For dogs. Can you see this little guy?
We can.
There he is. There we go. Christmas time, there are more dogs that need to be adopted at the rescue centers. And I just want to encourage everybody to pick up a little guy. I just picked this guy up at the North Pole Rescue, and he's such a sweetie. His name's Boomer. But consider that. If you're going to add a puppy to your household, go to the rescue and get a puppy that really needs a home. They'll love you forever, and Santa loves you too.
Well, I can tell you that having a dog around the house is really rewarding, and I've never had a dog in my married life, but all of a sudden last year, this became very apparent in Sarah and our life. And Gracie, who is a little Maltese, she's 1.5 years old, 6 pounds, and she loves to sit in front of my 75A4, and she just watches as the dial goes around and people speak. So, yes, you're right. A dog can change your life for the better. That's no question.
Well, thanks. Bob, I know you're busy. I just want to say 7-3 and Merry Christmas to everybody. And don't forget 3916 every night at 7:15. We'll see you there. Merry Christmas. I got to go. It's Christmas time and I'm busy. Bye-bye now.
Same to you. And that's really great. And you're a wonderful little dog. Isn't that cool? Yes. And I do hope that your life has a dog in it. I wouldn't have said that a few years back, but wow, it's really cool. And we're very proud of our little Gracie. Well, I think maybe Gordo might be with us. We've had a little transmit problem there with the TriCaster early. But let's see what's popping up here. What's going on in Costa Mesa?
Hi there, Bob, and hi to all. And yep, 3916. I heard it, I believe, last year, and it was a lot of fun. Hey, Bob, the Northern Arizona DX Association says, look what we've done for Route 66. So, Victor, if we can blast through those quick Northern Arizona, they have a new trailer. It was a toy hauler, and they've converted that now to be a ham radio portable station. And as you can see, all that work turned out to be a wonderful ham station in a trailer that the Northern Arizona DX Association can take out. And look at all the workmanship that each of their personnel have done. So if you get an opportunity, we encourage all of you that are interested in Route 66 to take a look at Northern Arizona DX Association, and voila, you'll have a wonderful setup like this. And Bob, we know you've been very instrumental in Route 66 on the air, so they wanted to say hi and show off their newest addition. Back to you, Bob.
Yeah, excellent. Well, they've done a lot for the hobby and keeping it going down there, not only on DX, but they're always on the top of the list of the Route 66 guys. So we're thrilled to have them associated here with Ham Nation. Well, Gordo, I think you might have some wonderful pictures of a very favorite place of yours. So let me sit back and see what you got going.
All right. Well, thanks, Bob. And the pictures are not wonderful. In fact, they're sort of terrifying. So, Victor, if you want to bring in those shots, I'm very happy to say that no lives were lost. A couple of injured personnel. But fire watch, that's what we do in Southern California. And right in our backyard, well, maybe 10 miles away, we had a huge fire this past week during the height of Santa Ana winds. And as you can see, there is via Zoom, which you and I do every day to clubs all over the world. The Zoom capabilities allows the Irvine Ranch Conservancy and the Orange County Parks to have ham radio operators called Firewatch, and the ham radio operators on Zoom, for half of them, the other half are out there live looking with binoculars. Those watching Zoom that you see on the right-hand side are brought up to date on what they need to be looking at. Well, what they need to be looking at is what Tony is going to present, and that is on Zoom, thanks to the power companies, thanks to county and state and all sorts of organizations. They now have cameras that are looking at all of the fire potential spots, and our ham radio operators will take two or three of these and study them carefully, looking for the sign of fires. And if they think they see something on the Zoom, which is live, they can radio to Fire Watch ham volunteers out on hilltops and say, can you document or can you confirm that what we see on the camera is indeed smoke that just started about 30 seconds ago. So Zoom is indeed life-changing for ham radio operators, and it is so important. And we credit the Irvine Conservancy Firewatch and OC Parks for a great job in getting ham radio involved in watching for wildfires. Well, this coming January, Bob, you know, is Quartz Fest, celebrating, gosh, more than about 24 years. But instead of calling it Quartz Fest and QF, it's now QP, and that is Quartz Pause. That's right. Our two representatives of Quartz Fest are going into hiding. No, we're not going to burn them up like the fires we've had right outside our back door here. This is actually just a mock-up of one of those, but it's going to get toasted because this year, yep, there'll be hundreds of hams coming together off of Highway 95 in Arizona, and these hundreds of hams will not be doing this. Nope. Say goodbye. Those of you coming, there will be no organization. There'll be no setup tables, no tents. So this is history. And yeah, those that plan to go and set up your tents, you're more than welcome. But nope, that's Russell, our music director, that is saying goodbye to the porta potties. They won't be there either. And nope, at Quartz Pause this third week in January, we won't see folks all parked close together like this. They'll be in the wide open like this. You just pick a cactus and set up and you're on your own. Nothing to plug in other than get those solar panels out. However, it doesn't mean there'll be a shortage of activity. There will be plenty of activity. That's Gary and, you know, the other guy. We're heading out in his fun machine, and there'll be those running all over, socially distanced away from everyone. And as you can see, there's going to be no cooties out there, out in the boondocks as we look for geocaches or tea hunts, whatever we may be doing out there. Now, for seminars, if folks want to offer an impromptu seminars, none of them are announced ahead of time because we don't know what they are. They'll be, thanks to the Amateur Television Network and Gary, they'll be on regular coaches' TVs up around channel 58 or 59 on the cable side of the TV. And he's got enough power that he can easily get that signal for many miles in each direction. So if you want to see Neil, W6FOG, and Nisha talking about drones, you can watch that either at a distance this coming January, or you can watch it on live TV. If you want to watch Marilyn and her team that are gold panning, they'll all be individually separated by probably a quarter mile. But look, yeah, I see them. There's gold nuggets in there because Quartz Fest has quartz and quartz has gold. Yeah, third week of January. That's Tracy Lineker, and Tracy's with the Mountaintop Amateur Radio Association, and he's going to be doing all sorts of fun things, but this shows that in years past, we've had him talking about the BioNO batteries and solar panels, and if you look to the right, yep, that's the camera tied into the amateur television that'll beam a signal out that'll end up on cable channels 58 or 59 for those that have a TV, which everybody does in their coach. And Rick Paquette, W7RAP, is again, he is now official as a section manager for a couple more years. Congratulations, Rick. And what he'll be doing, I'm sure, is the cast iron cooking. And again, this is not an organized event where everybody will get in close. Everybody will just be able to come up and staying 10 to 20 feet away, do their thing. Those of you with tents, remember, no porta potty, so work it out. But there'll be summits on the air with the local mountains that extend up 2,000 feet, just a few miles away to get started up the hills. We'll have our communications van, and again, we're away from everybody else. No one will be real close to each other. And the Arizona team, they'll have their distance challenge as they do at Quartz Fest every year. And they set up and operate with different operators trying to see who can communicate the furthest. And again, it'll be everybody on their own, no one together. And of course, there's no Quartz Fest without AC and his banjo made out of a bedpan. And this is Quartz Fest. It's fun, but now it's called Quartz Pause. Chris and Dick Norton, ARRL for our section, is going to be there. Chris, of course, gets it organized. Chris and Lynn do a fabulous job. But again, this year, it's not going to be organized. It's just going to be a fun gathering where people can go into town and see the rock, gym, and minerals show. And as you can see there, Bob, a wonderful sunset. So if you're not doing anything in your RV in January, you should be. But remember, it's not organized. It's just going to be a fun time at Quartz Pause, Arizona, along with a big white tent in town for the RV show, as well as the rock and gyms and minerals show at the same time at Quartzsite, Arizona. So we're going to have a great time in Arizona, and there'll be plenty of ICOM equipment, including this one right here, that we'll see in action. ICOM America gear makes the grade every year at Quartz Pause Quartz Fest.
Ham for the holidays. ICOM's newest handheld amateur radio is the ID52A. Larger radio, larger color display, and louder audio. This VHF-UHF digital transceiver is much more than a replacement for the ID51A. The color display is 2.3 inches for exceptional viewability, and the audio is 80% louder. This multifunction dual-band D-Star transceiver supports DR mode for easy access to local repeaters based on internal GPS information, as well as terminal and access point modes. The ID52A also has Bluetooth for audio and data control. The IC705 is the perfect sidekick for hams who like to enjoy what both the great indoors and outdoors have to offer. It's the perfect QRP companion. Base station features and functionalities at the tips of your fingers in a portable package covering HF, 6 meters, 2 meters, and 70 centimeters. This compact rig weighs in just over 2 pounds with RF direct sampling for most of the HF band and IF sampling for frequencies above 25 megahertz. 4.3-inch color touchscreen with live band scope and waterfall, 5 watts with the BP272, 10 watts with 13.8 volt DC external, single sideband, CW, AM, FM, as well as full D-Star functions. Visit iComAmerica.com/amateur for more information on iCom radios. And iCom invites you to enter weekly after each episode of Ham Nation by going to iComAmerica.com/hamnation. You could win some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats and learn how you might win in the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. For December, that new radio is the IC2730A dual band mobile with optional Bluetooth. It's a dual band, dual watch mobile, simultaneous VHF-UHF, VHF-VHF, or UHF-UHF receive. It has a large high contrast display for easy visibility and a nicely laid out, easy to operate control interface. Weather Channel receive and alert is built in, and there's free downloadable CS2730 programming software, and an optional Bluetooth module is available as well. So why don't you register by going to iComAmerica.com/hamnation after this and each episode of Ham Nation. Sign up and good luck, and don't forget to follow iCom America, Inc. on Facebook and Twitter. And this week on Smoke and Solder, well, it's, I don't know, you may have seen something like this before, you may not have. But I was going through my phone, a couple of days ago, and I found a video clip on there that I had forgotten that I had recorded just recently at one of my visits to one of the AM transmitter sites. This one is a 50 kilowatt site that's located out in a swamp, and things could be better at that site. You'll notice quite a bit of rust and things that certainly could use some improvement there, but you know, AM is not getting the love like it got years ago, so at this point, we're mostly in maintaining mode. But that doesn't stop the signal. It still goes just like it always did. That doesn't stop the RF either. We're going to look at a tower here that is only used at night. During the day, it's not on. It's just sitting there floating, disconnected, sitting on an insulator. But that doesn't mean you couldn't get burned there. So let's take a look at this. I'm about 30 feet away from the tuning unit, and you can hear the modulation plainly on a 50 kW. Now, I won't do this with that tower down there. That one's got 50 kilowatts on it. This one is floating right here. The tower itself sits on an insulator, of course. And there's a wire going up here into the contactor, but it's in the off position, so there's nothing connected to this tower. Let's see if we got a little radiation induced into this tower.
This spark gap right here is designed to shunt lightning to ground. Have we ever had a lightning here? I would say so. And quite a bit of it. I probably need to replace that bolt there.
Well, that was a short and sweet smoke and solder there, and there was really no solder and no smoke, but there was the arc of RF, which is always a fun thing to watch. Now, you could walk up to that tower, and like I say, there is no physical connections to it, no transmitter power going to it. What you were seeing causing that arc in there, it's hard to get it to where it sustains an arc so that you can hear the modulation, but you probably noticed there was a little modulation in that. That's just what was induced from the other tower setting down the field there that was operating at 50 kilowatts. You know, they're both the same height of towers. They're both top-loaded. And so that's the situation you deal with where you've got two resonant antennas near each other. Even if the second one has no power on it, there is going to be some RF in it because it's going to pick up radiation from the other one that's not very far away there. So, yes, if you reach up there and touch that dead tower, you're going to know about it. You'll definitely feel it, maybe get a little burn on your fingers there. I wouldn't want to do anything like that with that 50 kW tower down there. Now, yeah, I could, I could probably take a piece of metal and draw an arc off of it, a much bigger arc than what we saw there. But, you know, you're really not supposed to get that close to those towers running that kind of power for any length of time. So we won't be seeing that. But there's just a little, you might say, I don't know if you'd call it free RF or not, but free space RF just kind of floating around on a disconnected tower there. So that's it for Smoke and Solder this week, because I know Don has got something special lined up for us next year. Don, what are you doing this week?
I have been enjoying myself this week with my unscheduled time off, and I really enjoyed the Smoke and Solder. It brings back some memories of my days in my early broadcasting career at 50,000 watt KOMA. I've brought this up several times before. It's interesting working around a 50 kW AM transmitter and tower site. That's for sure. I spent the weekend with the Skywarn recognition event, made 35 contacts, had a lot of fun with that. But there's another great operating event coming on that is another recognition, appreciation sort of a thing. And that is the Youth on the Air. And in fact, we have some guests to talk about that tonight. We have Neil Rapp, WB9 VPG, and our former Young Ham of the Year recipient, Bryant Raskel, KG5 HVO. And Neil and Bryant, welcome to Ham Nation tonight.
Thank you for having us on.
Thanks, Don.
So tell us what's going on with the Youth on the Air. Just fill us in. Give us the details.
So right now in the month of December, we are celebrating Youth on the Air Month, which is an international celebration. It's a special event operated by youth under the age of 26 years old around the world. Here in the United States, we are going to use four special event call signs, K8Y, K8O, K8T, and K8A. And we have a great team of 25 youth operators coast to coast that will be standing by to take your calls and put you in the log. And internationally, there will be many other stations on the air with the suffix YOTA. And if you're looking for information about how you can find those call signs, we have a very helpful link on the Youth on the Air webpage, which is youthontheair.org.
Excellent. What are the? Is it the whole entire month of December we're talking about?
Yes, it is the entire month of December, and there will be stations on pretty much all the time. Depending on where the station is located. You know, here in the United States, you can probably find us, you know, on the air from early morning to, you know, late at night. In Europe, they'll be active on all bands, all modes. And here in the United States, we might as well be active on satellites. Some of our operators are into that facet as well.
Oh, excellent. So you said it's a special event. Will there be certificates or other awards recognition available?
Yes, there will be certificates available, and I think that's one of the slides. You can find out information about the awards on the YOTA website, which is events.ham-yota.com. And the way you can achieve the different award statuses is by working the Youth on the Air Month special event stations on different modes and different bands. And again, more information is on the website, and you can get a certificate based off how many stations you worked, and QSL information is also on the website.
I see that ham-yota.com website down there at the bottom of that certificate. That might be an easier way to find out all of the information. Is everything pretty much linkable from right there?
Yes.
There you go. That's an easy way to get to it. Ham-yota, I believe is what it was. It's gone now. But anyway, there's the website. Yeah, ham-yota.com. There it is.
Yes, it's actually events.ham-yota. I just want to make sure I just clarified that.
Ah, very good. Very good. Excellent. Well, I'm excited about this. I'm going to get on and try to work some of you guys as well. And Neil, what's going on with you and the Yota? I know that you're really involved in this.
I am. I sit back and say, hey, Bryant, take care of this. Bryant, you know, I got him started last year on this, and this year it's been, okay, Bryant, it's all you. Go. So this is the whole Yota motto, the creed of Yota is youth for youth. And so we're trying to put them in charge. So this is the first one. Eventually, I want to get this camp, you know, running by youth, but we're not there yet. But Yota Month, I'm good. Bryant's running the ship, so I just kind of promote it and help him and take some emails and funnel things to him and answer his questions and let him run with it. So they've had some really good success, and he's got a few numbers to share, but we're already at some great numbers, and it's only the 9th of December. So pretty wow. Impressive. And we got some pretty cool news right before the show. So I'll let Bryant share all of that. And then at the end, come back. I want to talk about a couple of those pictures that are coming up here.
Sure, Bryant, tell us about your information on this now.
Sure. So again, like Neil said, we're only 9 days into this event, but we internationally over 39,000 contacts have been logged by youth operating the special wow. event call signs, and 7,400 of those QSOs have been logged by youth from the United States, which I think is really cool. And, you know, the numbers are getting higher every day, but we can't do it without, you know, the ham community of turning on the radio and finding the special event stations and giving us a call. You know, our operators, they want to work you. So all you have to do, you know, turn on the radio and we'll be there.
So the old cliche that operators are standing by is indeed true when it comes to
yes,
youth on
literally.
The air. That's excellent. Well, I'm so proud of what the youth is doing with amateur radio. Certainly that you guys prove that ham radio is not an old man's hobby, strictly an old man's hobby, because you've got young men and women and boys and girls all over the world who are the next generation, not only of ham radio, but of everything. You're going to be running the world when we're all gone. So I think that we're in pretty good hands, and particularly proud of you as a Young Ham of the Year recipient from a few years ago. Watching you from when I first met you, you were brand new in the hobby and considerably shorter than you are now. But watching you grow up not only in amateur radio but also just as a person into a young adult has just been the most gratifying thing, and getting to know your family and everyone else over there by you guys just warms my heart. And I know that that we're all in great hands. So be sure you tell your family hello from us, would you?
Yes, sir, we'll do. I appreciate the comments. Very nice of you.
Good deal. Well, thank you, Brian. All right, Neil, what do you got? What do you got for us now? You said come back to you at the end.
Okay. I've got a little surprise for Bob here. I got a couple of pictures the other day, and they were from Eileen, TF2EQ, in Iceland, and she was in on that summer virtual Yoda Day. If you remember, we were talking about that. Back in June. Well, we shipped the prizes to her in Iceland. Well, she went to school in the Netherlands, and it took several months for those to arrive. And then she came home from a school in the Netherlands in Iceland and sent me this picture right here. If you notice, she's got a Heil headset that she won that Heil Sound donated, and she's got a foot switch that she won from a couple of the competitions. So she sent me those pictures. So I just wanted to share those with her, with everybody. And she is activating TF3, YOTA, from Iceland during December Yoda month. So listen for Eileen on the air. So just wanted to share those. And here in the U.S., listen for K8Y, K8O, K8T, and K8A. Youthontheair.org links to all of that stuff. So again, that may be an easy place. Or you can go to the QRZ pages of any of those four call signs. And one thing that we put on youthontheair.org, if you go to youthontheair.org, right at the top, there's a big link that says, looking for Yoda stations? Click here. And will filter on DX Summit all the Yoda stations that are on at the moment. So if you want to see where the Yoda stations are and you want to work a Yoda station, just go to that page, scroll down there a little bit, and right in the middle, it says looking for Yoda month stations, click here, and that'll send you to DX Summit, but it'll filter only Yoda stations. So it's already pre-programmed. That's the easiest way to see who is on. It looks like K8Y is on right now. So
that's a
great thing to use. Youthontheair.org, and just go there and you can read all about the Yoda month activities and links to the Europeans who are running this whole thing. Thanks to Tommy and Philip and all the guys over in the Youngsters on the Air over in Europe for inviting us to be a part of this. So that's it.
That's excellent. I particularly like the DX Summit pre-programmed. That makes it so easy. Just one-click access, one-stop shop. Find out where all of these stations are and go and get them. Neil and Bryant, thank you guys so much for everything that you do for promoting amateur radio and youth and amateur radio. You guys work on this all year long, I know, and not just you guys, but a lot of others as well. And so we thank you all for your efforts, and hope you guys make a billion and a half contacts this month.
Well, we appreciate your support, Don. We hope to work you this December.
I'm working on it. Yeah, I'll see what I can do since I have more free time these days.
Yeah. Bryant's team, by the way, the big news was Bryant's team is number one. The U.S. has more contacts than anybody else right now. So
that is true.
We'll see if that holds up. But we've got a little advantage because we've got four call signs and they only have like two. But, you know.
I have one final question.
They're doing a great job.
For Bryant. One final question for Bryant. How many of those are on CW?
I'm not actually sure right now. A good portion of our contacts have been on digital with the recent digital mode contest, and a lot of the good portion of contacts have been on SSB. But I'm sure when a lot of our CW operators are available to operate, they'll light up the lower portions of the band so you can pull out the paddle and work a couple.
Well, I know that you're a first-class CW operator. In fact, it's funny. when I see Charlie Wooten post that you've beat him again in some contest or something. So I just
always a good time.
I know. Charlie's a great guy. He's probably watching on the chat room and watching tonight. So anyway, gentlemen, thank you all so much for everything you do with Youth on the Air. And we hope that you make a ton of contacts, and congratulations on everything that you do.
Thanks, Don.
Have a good night.
All right. We'll catch you guys on the air. Let's jump into the latest news of the week and a solar update as well. Dr. T says that there's a solar storm hitting pretty much right now, and that's coming up right now here on Amateur Radio Newsline and the Ham Nation headlines. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 2249, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, December 9th, 2020. We begin this week with news that the noted Arecibo Radio Telescope, famous in groundbreaking scientific research and seen in a number of Hollywood movies, is no more.
The historic Arecibo Radio Telescope in Puerto Rico, once the largest in the world, has collapsed before its scheduled demolition could begin. The telescope, which had been shut down by the National Science Foundation following storm damage, was credited with unlocking numerous astronomical mysteries for more than 50 years. On Tuesday, December 1st, the telescope's 900-ton receiver platform fell 400 feet, landing on its reflector dish. It was the final blow to the radio telescope, where an auxiliary cable snapped in August, causing damage to the reflector dish and the receiver platform. Then last month, a main cable broke. Built in the 1960s, the telescope was part of a 1974 research project into gravitational waves that led to a Nobel Prize in Physics in 1993. The telescope also followed asteroids on their earthbound paths, but became quite an attraction itself, drawing some 90,000 visitors a year. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY.
Nothing speaks so well to the future of ham radio than hearing young voices calling QRZ.
December is Yota Month, youngsters on the air, and teams of operators younger than 26 are hoping for pile-ups. They're calling from Pakistan, Serbia, Iceland, Sweden, Bulgaria, and places beyond. Each team carries the suffix Yankee Oscar Tango Alpha, along with the hope that their logs will be filled with call signs from around the world. This is a chance to showcase amateur radio for the unlicensed and help those newly licensed gain confidence. Stations include Tango Foxtrot 3 Yota in Iceland, Delta Bravo 0 Yota in Germany, Golf Bravo 20 Yota in the UK, and II1 Yota in Italy. You'll hear them on HF, repeaters, and even satellites. Because so many Yota summer camps were cancelled in response to the COVID-19 pandemic, these young operators are more eager than ever to show what they can do. Support the world's future amateur community, and who knows, you may be eligible for a bronze, silver, gold, or platinum award just for working as many Yota stations on as many bands and modes as you can. The teams have their own collective goal as well, to beat last year's total of 130,000 QSOs logged by 47 participating stations. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jason Daniels, VK2LAW.
Finally this week, how do you say thank you? Try sending Morse code, as London's tallest building is doing.
The Shard Building, which defines the London skyline, has been the symbol of the city since its completion 7 years ago. It was recently transformed into a symbol of gratitude in a way that ham radio operators, more than most people, can comprehend. At 306 metres in height, it's the UK's tallest building, which makes its important message, flashing in blue and white LED lights at the very top, hard to miss. That message is in Morse code. The 575 lights flash, spelling thank you, two words directed to the National Health Service workers whose efforts have helped protect the British public since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. City dwellers and visitors have stopped to marvel at the light show since it began on the night of Thursday, the 26th of November. But even London's tallest building isn't above needing a little help. That came from the Radio Society of Great Britain. The RSGB stepped in to verify that all those high-profile dits and dahs were indeed being sent correctly, ensuring that the message's delivery enjoyed a towering triumph. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jeremy Boot, G4NJH.
And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at arnewsline.org. with Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, Jason Daniels, VK2LAW, Jeremy Boot, G4NJH, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now, here's the solar update from Dr. Tamitha Scove, WX6SWW.
We are on pins and needles this week as we wait for an Earth-directed solar storm to arrive. We've been expecting it over the last maybe 6 to 8 hours, and it hasn't arrived yet, so it is definitely fashionably late. As we switch to our front side sun, you can see in the south, back on the 7th, watch this region, this is region 2790, rotate into Earth strike zone, and then whammo! See that? That was a near M-class flare, and it launched a massive solar storm. This solar storm did give us a halo in the coronagraph, so we definitely know it's Earth-directed. And meanwhile, as it continues to rotate in past the Earth strike zone, we can see that there's a coronal hole that's kind of lined up with it. That coronal hole is also sending us some fast solar wind right about the same time, so we expect this to be kind of a 1-2 punch. As a matter of fact, the fast wind is actually arriving ahead of this big solar storm, so we're going to have to see how late this solar storm wants to be. Now, this was originally projected to be a G3 level solar storm, but likely because it's later and later, that means that the storm is probably weaker and a bit weaker than we anticipated. So maybe a G2 level, maybe not even that, maybe a G1 level, but we're hoping that it's still going to be enough to bring us some aurora down to mid-latitudes. Now, as we switch to our far-sighted sun, this is Stereo A, and it's staring at the sun pretty much from the side. You can see on the stereo's west limb, region 2790, as it fires off that Earth-directed solar storm. That's the one that we're waiting for now. And then on top of that, you can see there's a couple regions in Stereo's view in the south that have not yet rotated into Earth view. These are near the Stereo's east limb. And the nice thing is that one of them, the one that's completely on the east limb, is also firing solar storms and possibly big flares. So the cool thing is that even if this solar storm fizzles a little bit, we do have another solar storm producer that's going to be rotating into Earth view in about maybe 4 days or so. That will also help boost that solar flux, which has dropped a little bit. We're back in the 80s right now, and that these regions might actually boost us back up into the good range for radio propagation on Earth's day side. So amateur radio operators and emergency responders, just hold on. Things are continuing to look up. Switching to our solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are beginning to feel the effects of that fast solar wind from the coronal hole that's rotating in through the Earth strike zone. And don't forget, we're still expecting that earthward-directed solar storm to hit at any time now. So at high latitudes, NOAA is expecting major storm conditions. As a matter of fact, we're expecting about a 60% chance of a major storm. Now, we were originally expecting it to be a G3-level solar storm. Likely not anymore, especially with this thing taking a little bit longer to hit. Remember, as the storm takes longer to reach us, that means it's a little bit weaker or a little bit weaker. So we're still expecting major storm conditions, but maybe not as nearly the intense hit that we had been anticipating. Still, between the fast solar wind and that solar storm, we should see effects clear in through the weekend, especially at high latitudes before things begin to settle down. Now, mid-latitudes, we're also expecting a major storm, but I'm beginning to think that maybe we'll only see a minor storm. We do have probably about a 20% chance of a major storm at mid-latitudes, which means we still have a decent chance for aurora at mid-latitudes, but it just won't be the massive solar storm that everybody's projecting it to be anymore. Oh, well, what do? These things happen, right? So expect to have conditions that could be conducive to aurora in through the beginning of the weekend at mid-latitudes, but it'll be a bit more fleeting. And then again, as we move through the weekend and into next week, things will definitely begin to settle down. Switching to our solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, everything is back into the green once again, even though we have had some near M-class flares lately. Unfortunately, region 2790 is kind of quiet. It's all tuckered out, I think, after that last big flare and that big Earth-directed solar storm it sent. So things have definitely quieted down. We don't have any risk on Earth's side for radio blackouts at this time, although region 2790 is still with us. And there's a couple other regions regions that are trying to form. Plus, we have some new regions that are going to be rotating into Earth view here over the next 3 or 4 days. And maybe that will then up the flare risk again near the end of the week. However, we also are still hovering around, it's in the marginal range, in the low 80s for solar flux. Like I said, that once that big flare was fired by region 2790, it sure tuckered out that region, and therefore the solar flux kind of dropped a little bit. But we do foresee that we're going to be picking up in solar flux again when the new regions rotate into Earth view. Don't know if it's going to get us up into the good range again for radio propagation on Earth's day side, but it definitely will help. So amateur radio operators and emergency responders, you don't have to worry too much either about big radio blackouts or worry about the solar flux tanking again. I don't think we're going to see that anymore. Now, also, because we are still climbing out of solar minimum, the cosmic ray flux is still a bit more intense than we'd like it to be. So you frequent flyers, and this does include air crew who fly over 800 hours annually and fly at high altitudes and high latitudes, you are still in the moderate range for radiation dose. And this does include prenatal passengers. So please take this into consideration in your flight plans. For more details on this week's space weather, including when and where to see aurora, especially with that solar storm coming, and also more information on the total solar eclipse, come check out my channel or see me at spaceweatherwoman.com.
Thank you, Dr. T. There is the website right there, spaceweatherwoman.com. Make sure you check her out on Twitter, at Tamitha Scove. She also has a YouTube channel, Tamitha Scove, and in fact, yesterday she posted a 30-minute recording of a live stream where she took questions and all about the current solar activity that we're expecting right now, imminent, as a matter of fact. So check her out on YouTube. 30-minute video posted yesterday. Always appreciate Dr. Tamitha Scove. Thank you so much. We also appreciate Amanda, K1DDN in Colorado, and she's in the chat room. Hello, Amanda.
Well, good evening, Don. Nice to hear you this weekend. Sound like you ran a little bit of a pileup, which must have been a bit fun. I did not.
It was.
I didn't go that way. I just wanted to hunt and peck and see. And I worked at like the National Hurricane Center and stuff like that. I thought that was fun. Heard some new operators doing that. So kudos to you guys and gals for getting on there and making Skywarn Recognition Day probably as good as it possibly could have been, if not better, just because there was more stations easily heard because they were operating from their home stations. So that was kind of fun. Let's see. I was going to make some, are there actually people flying? Dr. T always talks about watching out for being in planes and stuff, but yes, unfortunately there are still people flying. That's just, it is what it is. All right. I did have to answer a question for Chumley. Yes, all Aries groups, especially in California, will use technicians, mostly because a lot of their traffic is sent via either Winlink, Packet, or local FM repeaters. So never, ever think that you hold too low of a license or that you wouldn't be accepted to your Aries group. Aries groups mostly consist of technicians. So get out there and join up with your Aries group and get active, although it's hard to get active right now, but at least get on the nets and take the trainings and things like that and be ready for your next public service or public safety event, whenever those might take place again. The only other thing I wanted to say, George, this was a comment for you. Well, two comments. I enjoyed the net last night, by the way. And the second, Burke is a huge fan of your video tonight. He really liked it.
I saw that. So. Apparently, Burke likes to see either wasted RF or tools being defaced.
Oh, okay. I do. I have a secret
he's all
about
the
you
sparks.
Guys.
Well, sometimes, you know, you go back to his area over there and you'll hear him giggling behind the door. I'm assuming that's what's happening.
It could very likely be.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if Burke is in studio right now, but if he is, I heard he makes a hell of an XLR cable. So way to go, Burke. George, anything else you wanted to say?
No, just, you know, that was just something I found on my phone. I had forgotten that I shot that. I just happened to be out there a month or two ago and I had my phone with me and I said, well, I'll shoot something. And that's what popped in my head at that time. Now that I see the video, I need to go check my pliers again because I probably am going to have some rusty pliers here in the future. I think maybe I kind of damaged the chrome plating on them a little bit, but we'll see. By the way, those did have an insulated handle on them, although, and I won't get into it tonight, I have actually climbed a tower with 5 kilowatts on it before. There is an art to do it. It's before the laws were changed now, and an 80-year-old consultant I was working with, I told him, well, let me go, you know, turn the transmitter off, and, you know, I'll go on up there. He said, you don't need to do that, and then proceeded to tell me how. And, yeah, I climbed it, got on it. I don't think I had too much damage from it. But let me just say, you could feel the song, you know, hitting you in the butt. I'll just put it that way. You could feel the RF on that tower.
That's not for me. Did it start with something like you have to start from the ground and you have to jump and like catch yourself onto the tower to climb it?
Yeah. You don't want to be standing on the ground. Okay. Yeah. Well, actually, what he had me do is take a wooden ladder and lean it up against the tower and then get on the ladder and take a pair of just wire pliers without any insulation on the handles, just, you know, metal pliers, grab a member of the tower with those, and then do it around like this to break through the paint so that the pliers have got a good bite into the metal. And all the time you're doing that, you're hearing it, and sparks are flying. But he's just saying, go ahead, you know. So I did that. And once I got it, bit through the paint good and contacted on metal, he said, now reach on up there and just climb on up on it. Now, I didn't have to go very high. You know, it was only, 20 feet or so to a sample loop that was mounted up there. That's the only time I've done anything like that. I'm not sure what kind of effects I've had afterwards. Could have been some. But let me just say, you know, I was wearing blue jeans, and you could feel all these things stinging your leg, you know.
Wow.
And actually kind of, you know, I did feel the beat of the music there at one point. So, not recommended. Now, and this was before the RFR laws changed.
That whole test, that whole RF section, everybody that you learn for your technician test, George is the poster child for why this exists.
That sounds a lot like what these helicopter high tension power line workers do. They have a metal hook, and a lot of times they're like wearing chainmail, and they're attached to that, and so they reach that out and they drape it across the line. That way, their bodies are at the same potential that the conductor is, and that way they can reach out on that insulated skid and do the work that they have to do. That's what essentially what you were doing. You were putting your body at the same potential as the tower member by scraping through the paint and making that metallic contact. So that's interesting. Yep. To keep from getting bit when you reached over and grabbed it. That's interesting.
Yeah, because arcing was taking place right there in the jaws of the plier where it was contacting the tower. The only difference is I didn't have on a metal suit like those guys.
No.
You know? Well, that might have been nice.
That ain't for me.
We weren't concerned about, you know, stuff like that in the early 90s.
Yeah.
That was the early 90s? They didn't have safety precautions like that in the early 90s?
No, it was either the late 80s or early 90s. It was sometime during that period. Yeah, they didn't. No, they hadn't made the rules, they weren't that concerned about RF. But later, they did, and required us to take measurements and determine how close you could get to a tower at a certain amount of power and how long you could stay there before you had to back away. And all the RFR exposure limits and stuff, and I had to do studies and all that. And that's when I determined I was probably a little bit too close that day.
Mm-hmm. I remember in the early 80s when I was working at KOMA and they would shut the thing down, the 50,000 watt transmitter down for transmitter maintenance, like at 1 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday night, early Monday morning, the engineer and I would carry 6 foot long fluorescent tubes, just lights, out to the transmitter or to the tower. And it was still on. There was no audio going through it, but it was still pumping 50,000 watts. And they would blink on from the RF about halfway out there. We'd hang them in the chain link fence so we could see what we were doing out there. And standing in the doghouse, you know, in the phasing shack with 50,000 watts coursing around your body, you're just a couple of feet away from the tuning network. Yeah, it'll make your hair do weird things.
Yeah, this could explain a lot for both of us, Don.
Exactly. Yeah.
So when
I hung around 50,000 watt transmitters, it didn't affect me at all.
I'm just waiting for a power outage, and you guys both start singing Johnny Cash or something. I mean, like, this is an actual thing. I'm sure it is.
Probably glow in the dark.
All right. Oh gosh, we have burnt this one out, or George is already burnt out from it.
Burnout right, is the operative term.
Yeah, I could. You come up with those witty terms. I don't do that. Let's see. Yeah. Let's just go over the nets real quick. Like here, we have 75 meters on 3813 now. Look at 7192 for the 40 meter net, 14 Charlie for D Star, and DMR is on 31012. And I just, I know we have a really busy week next week, so I just wanted to make this little statement. This year in 2020, it's been really amazing when I've been stuck at home, and I'm, Don, maybe you can agree with this, is that, you know, typically during weekdays, if I was tuning around, you know, I was unemployed for 5-6 months. It was really amazing to hear the band so full and everyone coming together and getting on the air. And I'd like to just put out a little plea there. Like, I know a lot of people are going back to work, but yet more people are getting sent home again. Don't give up on that. Let's stay on the air, especially during the holidays, and make sure that everyone is has a friend, has a buddy to talk to. I heard some pretty sad comments over Thanksgiving tuning around the bands. I was listening for Gordo, by the way. And I heard this older gentleman say that it was the first time in 30 years or something that he wasn't going to be around his family, and it was just going to be him and his wife. So it really touched my heart, and I think that we all need to get on the air and make sure we're saying hello to anybody that's calling CQ or just is in a rag chew, just to make sure everyone's okay and lift up their spirits and let them know someone's listening. So that's my request. And I'm sure everyone else would agree with me. Thank you, Don.
Not just HF, but the local repeaters as well. Absolutely the local repeaters.
Definitely. Anyone that's going out there and just seeing their call sign and seeing monitoring or mobile, do it. Just jump in there and say hi. You know you have.
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm going to say 30 seconds, but I know goodbyes take like 4 minutes in ham radio. But just take the time. Just do it. It can make a difference in anybody's day, I think.
Right.
So.
Absolutely.
All right. So we're going to wrap this show up. Thanks, everyone. We've had a full episode. Anything from Riley to Yoda. So that's going to be fun to listen for them this month, too. So, all right. Who's wrapping this up, you guys?
Don?
I guess it's me. Any final words tonight, George, if you can, in your RF addled state of mind? And I'm speaking to the choir, by the way.
Don't do as I do as I say. I guess that would be the biggest takeaway from smoke and solder tonight. Now, just be careful when you're messing around with that stuff. You can get burned, even if there's no transmitter connected to it.
And you're a professional, so, you know, keep that in mind as well. So,
true. An amateur and a professional.
Exactly. Professional amateur. Exactly. All right. Amanda, thank you so much for exactly. We'll be here all week. Amanda, thank you so much for everything you do with the chat room. And we will thank, of course, Bob and Gordon and Riley And we'll thank Pete and Santa Claus, and we'll thank Neil, and we'll thank Bryant, and we'll thank Victor back at Twit, and we'll thank you at home or wherever you're watching for being here tonight. And we'll catch you next week. So 7-3 from all of us here at Ham Nation. We'll see you later. Good night, everybody.
Hi, I'm Jason Howell, host of All About Android. Each week, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Ron Richards and Florence Ion, as well as a whole rotating cast of guests, journalists in the Android space, experts, developers, and even people working on Android behind the scenes at Google. We talk about everything that has to do with Android, and you don't want to miss a single episode so you know what's going on behind the scenes. That's twit.tv/AAA. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss an episode.